previously on Rewind or Die.
You don't just eat an unmarked sandwich on a submarine, Jeff. That's how trust dies.
Mutinies start with mayonnaise.
So you're telling me that's a real ship that cosplayed as a fake ship in a movie about time-traveling Vulcans saving whales?
Exactly. A nuclear vessel, if you will.
Quentin Tarantino has been secretly ghostwriting movies for decades, like some kind of cinephile vigilante, just swooping in, dropping monologues about TV pilots and kung fu, then vanishing into the night.
Like your dentist sitting in on Abbey Road.
Snaps never panics. Snaps never betrays anyone. Snaps never argues about Jack Kirby.
Honestly, if they'd put Snaps in charge, the launch keys would have never turned. We've gone from nuclear war to comic books to a vampire strip club to Tarantino possibly ghostwriting. It's Pat. How deep is this submarine?
As deep as the ocean, Jeff. As deep as Hackman's voice when he says, "Give me the mission profile."
And now, the show.
Okay. So, last week was Crimson Tide, right?
Yup. Gene Hackman and Denzel trying to start a nuclear war over who gets to press the button first.
That movie was like, what if workplace disagreements had submarines and missiles? And also, what if Hackman was right, but also the devil?
Right. And we swore we were going to stay on track. And then we spent 12 minutes arguing about whether Hackman could fist fight a dolphin. And Steve brought up Flipper's military service again.
Hey, dolphins are part of the Navy. That's not a joke. That's a fact.
Okay, but now we're pivoting from submarine madness to techno-paranoia Will Smith. And Gene Hackman is back, more unhinged than ever, and living in a cage made of wire, regret, and coffee grounds.
I'm going to lose my mind. We are doing Enemy of the State, the movie that convinced me in high school that fax machines could ruin your entire life. Which, to be fair, is still true.
It's going to be 50% plot breakdown, 50% yelling about how Jack Black was just hanging out at the NSA like it was his college work-study job.
And probably 10% about the turkey. Don't forget the turkey. That turkey is a major plot device, and I refuse to let it go.
This whole episode is going to spiral. I feel it. We're going to start talking about surveillance drones and end up arguing about whether the WB Frog was a deep state psyop.
We're definitely going to get into, was this secretly the conversation to call harder?
And I have 5 pages of notes about how Tony Scott shot this movie like a high-speed car crash inside a sunglasses factory. It's beautiful.
I also brought conspiracy snacks. They're called Paranoia Chews. I bought them from a guy who told me Bluetooth is mind control.
Do they taste like regret?
Yeah, and batteries.
Ha, ha, ha. Perfect. Let's alienate the government and the snack industry in one episode.
Let's roll it, baby. Fire up the surveillance van and triangulate your fun. We're talking Enemy of the State right after this. All right, people, let's talk about Enemy of the State. This movie is what happens when you accidentally go Christmas shopping and end up in possession of a top secret hard drive that kills you through a turkey. It's a movie where Will Smith is just trying to buy a bra for his wife. And the next thing you know, boom. He's on the run from a secret government task force led by John Voight, who looks like he eats Constitution amendments for breakfast. You've got satellites tracking your every move. You've got Jack Black and Seth Green operating a military-grade computer system that looks like it runs on Blockbuster late fees. And you've got Gene Hackman showing up like a wizard of paranoia in a homeless tech lair screaming, "You're compromised, Robert," before duct taping your shoes to a microwave. This is not a drill. This is the Tony Scott Surveillance State Power Hour. Trademarked. It's red filters. It's sweat. It's lens flare off a payphone. And at the center of it all, Will freaking Smith. racing through a digital hellscape of his own making, dodging bugs in his suit, his pants, his toast, possibly his soul. This movie is what the net wished it was. This movie is The Fugitive if you replace Tommy Lee Jones with a faceless panopticon and a pager. So crack your mini disc, fire up your scrambled microwave modem, and delete yourself from every database you've ever been in, because today we're talking Enemy of the State.
Satellite imagery coming through.
Roger that, patch visual my location.
Subject entering lingerie store.
Hi.
Hey, hi.
So you want some lingerie for your wife?
Yes. I'm not really experienced in this. I mean, don't get me wrong. I mean, I'm experienced. You know, I don't want to come in here and look stupid. Too late.
Yeah.
Should have gotten her a watch.
Robert Clayton Dean was innocent.
Freeze there. Time's 10.
We have reason to believe that Mr. Zavitz may have passed sensitive materials to you.
What kind of materials?
Sensitive, sir.
Let's get into his life.
We have you bugged it, Mr. Dean.
Move to audio 3.
He was unsuspecting.
Hey, hey! Find the wrong house?
Hello?
Eric! Mr. Dean!
He was unaware.
You are the only woman in the world for me. You and Janet Jackson.
Coming your way over.
Now, what he doesn't know...
I'd like to report a break-in.
...could kill him.
Request immediate keyhole visual tasking, maximum resolution.
He's on your 6 o'clock!
You have something they want!
Can we talk about how that trailer is like 8 minutes long?
I got up, made coffee, came back. Will Smith was still yelling about his credit card being compromised.
You could fully leave the room, use the bathroom, and by the time you came back... John Voight's still explaining the plot to a guy in a van.
It tells you the entire movie, every single twist, and then somehow you still don't know what's going on when you actually watch it.
That trailer's not a promo. It's a training seminar.
Okay, so before we even get into the plot, and I mean before we try to untangle the absolute surveillance spaghetti that is this movie, can we just go around and answer the question, when was the last time you actually watched Enemy of the State?
Oh, I got this. I haven't seen it since I accidentally watched it on TNT for 7 straight hours in like 2003. It just kept coming back. It was on a loop. It was one of those movies we like because they're technically free weekends. I watched the same scene, Will Smith sprinting through traffic in a trench coat 4 times. And I never knew how he got there or how he escaped. It was like a surveillance-themed Groundhog Day. Just turkey sandwiches and fax machines and Jack Black yelling, "We're losing him."
Okay, wait. I thought I had seen this movie recently, but about halfway through the rewatch, I realized I was thinking of Spy Game. I was like, wait, when does Robert Redford show up? And then I was like, is this the one with the exploding phone booth? And then I was like, why is this movie suddenly about ducks? Turns out, I had never seen this movie. I had just built it in my head using memories of The Net, Sneakers, Burn Notice, and the last 10 minutes of The Pelican Brief.
Dude, same. I remembered the turkey scene, but I thought that was from Home Alone 2. I was waiting for Marv to walk out in a trench coat and yell, "Harry, the NSA's got me bugged."
You two are disasters. I watched it last year on purpose. I picked it. I queued it up. I made popcorn. I needed my fix of plot-induced sweating and Tony Scott camera angles that don't make sense but feel right.
No shame, but also full shame.
Wait, you chose this movie? Voluntarily? Like you woke up one day and said, you know what I need today? Will Smith yelling at John Voight in a parking garage while Gene Hackman shouts about microwaves from inside a cage.
Yes. I love this movie. It's like if The Bourne Identity was set entirely in a CompUSA in 1998. It's sweaty, it's paranoid, it's got fax machines and trench coats. What else do you want?
My memory of this movie is 20% real and 80% anxiety dreams about fax machines. Like, this movie lives in that weird part of your brain that still thinks caller ID is dangerous technology.
I swear to God, I thought the climax of the movie involved Will Smith escaping through a food court, but nope. That was from conspiracy theory Eagle Eye and the time I got chased out of a mall in 2004 for unauthorized pretzel sampling.
Honestly, Enemy of the State is less of a film and more of a collective national memory. We all saw it, but none of us saw the same version. It was different for everyone, like a tech-themed dream you had after watching too many Dateline reruns.
This movie has Mandela effect energy. Like, I remembered a scene where a guy hides a hard drive in a dog collar. Turns out that's not in the movie. But should it be?
I remembered Will Smith being chased by a drone, and it turns out it was just a helicopter shot. That's how paranoid this movie is. It retroactively makes you invent surveillance equipment that didn't exist yet.
Let's be clear. The last time you watched this movie, you were either on a couch, or you were hiding from a midterm paper, or you were 14 years old eating bagel bites thinking, dang, this is probably what adult stress feels like.
I think the last time I saw part of it, I was in a dentist's office and the sound was off, but I still got nervous.
Exactly. Enemy of the State doesn't need sound. It just vibrates with tension. It's like if your DVD player had feelings and they were all guilt.
Anyway, now that we've established none of us actually remembered this movie correctly, let's break it down from the beginning with ducks and espionage and actual data murder.
Here we go, baby. Strap in, fire up the mini disc player, and duct tape your ankles, because it's time for Enemy of the State. Okay, I just want to say it. This movie is from the era I like to call peak Will Smith, like the Holy Trenchcoat trilogy. This man was unstoppable. He was the summer box office tsunami. Every July, he dropped an iconic blockbuster and just walked away like, "You're welcome, America. I'll see you next year."
This was before we knew what we had. Before The Spider, before The Fall, before he said no to The Matrix and yes to a steampunk hell nightmare in Wild Wild West.
He was 3 for 3. Independence Day in 96, boom. Men in Black in 97, boom. Enemy of the State in 98, Trenchcoat, Turkey Sandwich, Trauma. It's like the ultimate blockbuster hat trick with bonus surveillance panic.
Let's be honest, he was crackling during this era. Like, he could read the ingredients on a cereal box and still deliver a box office hit. He'd say, sugar, corn, niacin. And you'd be like, that's a $300 million opening weekend right there.
And every studio was just like, how do we get Will Smith in a situation where he has to outrun a helicopter or fight a metaphor? He was a human genre blender. You want aliens? Boom. Government surveillance? Done. Secret government cowboy gadgets and a mechanical spider built by Confederate Kenneth Branagh? Okay, that one's on us.
He had swagger. He had sincerity. He had comedic timing. He could be charming and terrified at the same time. Like in this movie, he's full-on panicking, but still manages to throw out lines like, "You're either very smart or incredibly stupid." And I'm like, yes, Will, I am both.
Also, he was still riding the wave of Fresh Prince energy. This was post-TV stardom, post-chart topping, mid-icon birth. He had already punched an alien in the face and made sunglasses look like a federal accessory.
And this movie's important because it's where you start to see action thriller Will Smith become a thing. Like, not just the quips and the swagger, but the, I'm gonna survive this with my wits and a jacket energy. This is like the blueprint for I Am Legend, Enemy of the State, I, Robot, Pursuit of Happiness, you name it.
This is the origin of dramatic Will. Will Smith with a family to protect. Will Smith cry yelling into a payphone. Will Smith staring out a car window while regret plays softly in the background.
Okay, but let's be real. If you were making a Mount Rushmore of Will Smith roles, this era is like three of the four heads.
For real. It'd be like Men in Black, Independence Day, Enemy of the State, and Aladdin. Depending on how chaotic you're feeling.
Ali would punch you in the face for not including it, but yeah.
Also, this was when his soundtracks were still dominating. Like, Men in Black, the song, a banger. Wild Wild West, a curse. But the Enemy of the State soundtrack, no rapping. Which I think is why the Satellites got angry.
That's why the NSA came for him. He didn't record a tie-in single, and the algorithm flagged him as a national threat.
Honestly, not wrong.
But yeah, Enemy of the State is that perfect moment when he was pivoting from blockbuster goofball with a badge to box office dad who's not taking your crap. This is prime transition Will. This is Trenchcoat Evolution Will. This is Will Smith, Phase 2, Government Edition.
This was the point where he could do literally anything. And Hollywood decided to give him a cowboy outfit and a spider just to see if he'd flinch. Spoiler alert. He did.
So yeah, Enemy of the State is a weird one in his catalog, but it might also be one of the most important. It's the moment you realize, oh, this guy isn't just a movie star, he's the movie star.
Period. End of file. Now press play, triangulate the signal, and let the man run for his life in HD. Okay. Can I just say, I did not remember that this movie was secretly a Where's Waldo of late 90s future celebrities. Like, apparently the NSA surveillance team was just the entire lineup of the 2005 MTV Movie Awards.
Dude, same. Like, I thought I'd seen this movie, but every 5 minutes I was like, wait, is that, no way. That's, oh my God, it is. This was a revelation. This movie is like opening a box labeled tax documents and finding a Golden Globes after party inside.
Yeah, this is why I watch it once a year. I treat it like a facial recognition exam. Can you name this scruffy tech guy from three blurry angles? Yes, it's Jack Black, wearing khakis, with Seth Green, sitting next to Barry Pepper, in a surveillance van that probably smells like Mountain Dew and trauma.
I was not ready. Like, I swear the last time I saw this movie, I was too young to know who any of these people were. Now I'm watching it like, oh, wow, that's Jason Lee. Oh, my God, that's Tom Sizemore. Wait, is that Lisa Bonet? And then Jack Black rolls in like he's about to yell, satellite locked, bro! And I'm just sitting there trying to remember when this movie turned into a season of Celebrity Big Brother, NSA edition.
I swear to you, Seth Green popped up and I said out loud, no, he didn't. I rewound it. I paused it. I was like, that's not a tech guy. That's Scott Evil. What is he doing here?
And it keeps going. Barry Pepper is lurking in the background of every scene like he's a Halo soldier who wandered into a courtroom drama. Jake Busey shows up with that, I'm here to ruin someone's life and or try out for a Mountain Dew commercial energy. Scott Kahn is just vibing in the corner like his whole job is to say, copy that and look like a sunglasses rack at a gas station.
I paused the movie at one point and I'm like, there are four future franchise stars on screen right now and none of them have lines. They're just silently triangulating Will Smith while chewing gum like they're in a late 90s Mountain Dew ad about total signal domination.
I legitimately thought I saw Giovanni Ribisi at one point and yelled, there he is! But it was just a blurry reflection of Seth Green, and now I can't trust mirrors.
Let's not forget Jason Lee, king of the accidental plot trigger. The man skateboards through the woods with a mini disc full of government assassination footage like he's just filming his documentary for college credit, and then, boom, whole movie starts.
And Tom Sizemore, looking like he owns 12 strip malls and got all his furniture from an illegal electronics warehouse. He has one scene and makes it count by yelling in a bathrobe like Tony Montana's cousin who only handles lingerie store drama.
And Lisa Bonet, showing up like she's got three different secret identities and one bad ex-boyfriend who definitely works for the CIA. Like, this woman walks in and the movie instantly gets 10 degrees cooler and 30% more dangerous.
Let's not forget Gabriel Byrne, who appears for literally seconds, gets murdered off-screen, and still manages to radiate, I'm in charge of a European spy network energy.
It's a stacked cast. This thing is like a 1998 Sears catalog of future supporting actors who would one day get their own shows on FX.
I feel like the casting director just went to the future, found everyone who would be famous in 5 years, and then shoved them into a surveillance van with zero air circulation.
This isn't just casting. This is casting as prophecy.
Honestly, it's overwhelming. I felt like I needed to pause and start a corkboard with red string and just write, Jack Black? Why? In the middle.
This movie is a conspiracy, and not just the plot. The cast is a conspiracy. They assembled a team so powerful that I'm pretty sure this movie gave Jack Black his SAG card and his first ulcer.
One thing's for sure. Enemy of the State is the only movie where you can say, wait, Was that the dude from Boiler Room, the villain from Lethal Weapon 2, and that one guy from Varsity Blues? And the answer is yes. Yes, it was. Okay. I need to say something. This movie is not just a tech thriller. It is not just Will Smith runs for his life in a trench coat while eating turkey meat and yelling about civil liberties. This is a Tony Scott movement. This is Tony Scott Unchained.
Yes. This is peak Tony Scott camera chaos mode trademark. It's post-Crimson Tide, pre-Man on Fire. It's right in that magical era where he was like, what if I shoot every movie like a panic attack during a heat wave in a Best Buy?
This is definitely his sweaty government thriller trademark phase. Everyone is sweating. Will Smith? Sweating? John Voight? Sweating from his eyeballs? Gene Hackman? Sweating pure data. Even the lenses are sweating. You can see the humidity on the camera like it's trying to escape the frame.
The camera never stops moving. Even the credits look like they're trying to evade capture by Homeland Security. They're like, directed by Tony Sco. Oh, God, run.
Tony Scott directs like he just found out there's a fire somewhere, and he's not sure if it's on set or in the audience's soul.
There are shots in this movie that look like he climbed inside an HVAC system with a camera, screamed, roll it, and then jumped out a window. There is no establishing shot that lasts longer than a heartbeat. Everything is filmed like the camera operator is on a trending TikTok challenge called Escape the Frame.
He shoots like a man trying to outrun his own thoughts, like he's afraid if he holds the camera still too long, his personal demons will catch him and ask about his taxes.
There are sweeping aerials, Dutch angles, rapid zooms, and at least three scenes that feel like someone taped a GoPro to a dog and said, follow Will Smith.
You know it's Tony Scott when the camera's spinning, the light is orange, someone is yelling about exfiltration vectors, and you've already missed three lines of dialogue because the screen was vibrating with stress energy.
And let's be honest, we love it. It's sweaty, it's chaotic. It's like watching a fax machine have an existential crisis in slow motion.
Tony Scott movies from this period are not meant to be watched. They're meant to be endured with style.
They're not scenes. They're kinetic emotional events. A man walks into a room. Tony's like, cool, what if we light it entirely with CRT monitor glow and film it through a cracked window while a helicopter flies overhead and a jazz snare starts quietly weeping in the background?
You know what watching Enemy of the State feels like? It feels like a guy with a steaming hot coffee, sunglasses on indoors, and a rushed energy says, hang on, I just got to film this thriller real quick. And then sprints across a city while screaming, action! Every 4 seconds.
You could put any Tony Scott scene from this era on a treadmill and it would take off like a space shuttle.
Even when characters are just talking, Tony's like, yeah. Let's shoot this conversation from outside the car through the rain with a 45-degree tilt while a pigeon explodes in the background.
It's addictive. It's like he gave the camera espresso and unresolved trauma and said, go make art, you beautiful mess.
This man doesn't direct scenes. He drops a camera into a blender and yells, patriotism!
Tony Scott's movies look like they were shot during a manhunt, scored by a malfunctioning modem, and edited by a raccoon with a Red Bull.
And I love him for it. This movie doesn't slow down. It doesn't breathe. It doesn't care if you're following the plot. It just grabs your collar and screams, they're tracking you through the toaster while you try to eat lunch.
This is why Enemy of the State works. Because the camera is the surveillance. You feel hunted by the cinematography itself.
Do you feel like you're being chased by a movie? And you're losing.
All right. Enough reverence. Let's talk ducks. Let's talk murder. Let's talk turkey sandwiches and tragedy. Before we go any further, I mean, I just need to throw something out there. It's not official. It's not canon. But I am 100% convinced that Gene Hackman in this movie is just Harry Call from The Conversation.
Yes. Yes. Say it louder for the people being surveilled through their toaster right now. It's not technically the same character, but it is spiritually identical.
So you mean the sad trench coat man from the 1974 wiretapping movie? The one who plays saxophone alone and builds soundproof booths just to cry in?
Yes, that man. This is him. Just 25 years later, emotionally wrecked, living inside a metal cage made of regret and copper wiring. He's not going by Harry Call anymore. He's Brill now, which is just what you call yourself when you're done trusting the government and vowels.
Same trench coat, same trauma. More wire cages. This is Call post-breakdown. He vanished from San Francisco, grew a beard made of static electricity, and now he screams, "You're compromised, Robert!" at lawyers holding turkey sandwiches.
I honestly didn't even connect it until halfway through. But the moment he started talking about signal scramblers and safe zones and dismantling TVs, I was like, oh no, he's back, and he's worse.
This is what happens when you survive the conversation and just never get therapy. You end up living in a Faraday cage in Baltimore, eating cold soup and screaming at fax machines like they betrayed your family.
This movie is literally The Conversation 2, Wire Harder. They just never put it on the poster because the studio was like, we can't sell a sequel to a 1974 Coppola paranoia movie to a Will Smith audience.
It's so good, though. It's like Tony Scott said, let's bring back Hackman, but make him even more emotionally damaged and surrounded by haunted microwaves.
He has a machine that detects bugs in your pants. He's not paranoid. He's prepared. He's seen things. He's been recorded, manipulated, betrayed, and now he's basically a wizard of analog vengeance.
I guarantee you Tony Scott saw the conversation and said, okay, but what if he also had a surveillance lair made entirely out of trauma and broken radio parts?
I mean, honestly, I'd watch the trilogy, The Conversation, Enemy of the State, and then the third movie is just Hackman breaking into the Library of Congress and replacing all the microfiche with handwritten manifestos about toaster surveillance.
We're not going to go full tinfoil hat on this yet, but just remember, same man, new alias, same coat, more dread.
We'll get into it later. Full deep dive. We've got receipts. We've got side-by-side screenshots. We've got audio paranoia lineage.
I'm scared and excited, like I'm about to be audited by Gene Hackman.
Anyway, file that under important conspiracy threads we'll pick back up later. Right now, let's get into the ducks. Let's get into the mini disc. Let's get into the opening scene of Madness.
Hold up. Before we go full red string yarn board on the Hackman theory, we gotta throw to an ad.
Oh, right. We'll be back right after this message from one of our trusted sponsors. And by trusted, I mean they paid us in coupons and a mysterious envelope marked, "Do not open near microwaves."
This week's episode of Rewind or Die is brought to you by Mattress Anon Trademark, the only mattress company that doesn't ask questions, just answers and secrets. Need a mattress that hides your documents? Need one that bounces just right if the feds cut the power? Need one that smells like truth and aluminum? We got you. Each mattress. Anon mattress is stuffed with high-density foam, copper mesh, and that weird paper money used to be printed on. It's flame retardant, waterproof, and emotionally guarded. Use promo code SLEEPAGENT15 to save 15% off your first mattress or your last known location. Mattress Anon, where do you think the memory foam is storing the memories, huh?
Ha ha. Lewis. You cannot just start yelling about memory foam conspiracies during a sponsored message.
Did he say the mattress is emotionally guarded? What does that even mean?
That ad had serious bunker energy. I feel like my mattress is going to whisper secrets to me at 3 a.m. now.
Honestly, I'd buy one, just to see what kind of dreams it gives me.
Bad ones, with satellites and John Voight in a vest.
Lewis, real quick, while you're here, what are your favorite conspiracies? And more importantly, favorite conspiracy movies?
Oh, I have a list. Okay, conspiracy theory? Birds aren't real. You can't convince me otherwise. I've never seen one refuel. They're just nature-shaped drones.
Do you eat chicken nuggets, Lewis?
Yeah, drone nuggets.
Okay, what about movies?
Okay. Capricorn 1, Fake Space Missions, The Parallax View, Warren Beatty and Vibes, and They Live. Because put on the glasses, Adam. Conspiracy Theory with Mel Gibson. that man was right until the part where he wasn't. And this one, Enemy of the State, because it has everything. Satellites, mini-discs, Will Smith running like he's late to an Illuminati job interview.
Honestly, solid picks.
Except drone nuggets, I'm still stuck on that.
It's not canon, but it is legally suspicious.
And emotionally accurate.
And I have a whole theory about the microwave in Hackman's office.
Nope. Shut it down. Play the theme. We're going in. All right, we are going to get to the plot, I promise. But before we dive headfirst into Duck's mini-discs and microwave-based betrayal, we got to mention, Lewis is hanging out with us today.
Yep, he's here. He's got snacks. He's got takes. And I'm pretty sure he brought a folder labeled NSA, Cinematic Universe.
It's mostly just stills of John Voight looking disappointed in America.
You're not wrong. This movie basically invented the disapproving government dad villain trademark.
Lewis isn't taking over or anything. He's just chilling, jumping in when the moment's right. He's like our fourth mic with killer timing, the Paul Rudd of the group, if Paul Rudd watched Conspiracy Theory twice a year for comfort.
Also, I just love this movie. Like, deeply, this was one of those movies that made me think all adults lived in constant fear of satellite tracking and hidden cameras in their houseplants. And honestly, that was kind of reassuring.
That's actually perfect. Comfort paranoia cinema. You're anxious, but like in a stylish trench coat and the soundtrack slaps.
Like, yeah, sure, I'm being hunted by the government, but I look amazing doing it.
All right, Lewis, hit us. What's your official position on Enemy of the State as a conspiracy thriller?
Top tier. Like, yes, it's about surveillance and government overreach and all that, but it's also just a banger. It's got Will Smith in full panic mode, Gene Hackman yelling inside a homemade Faraday cage, and a supporting cast made of every actor who would go on to star in a Netflix crime series by 2011.
Not a single lie detected.
It's like a film school bingo card exploded.
Also, I saw this in theaters, then again on VHS. Then again on TNT in like 2003 while eating pizza bagels at 2 a.m. It is eternally embedded in my brain.
All right, Lewis is in, the energy is right, the trench coats are buttoned, and it's time. Let's talk about the duck footage that changed everything.
Coming up, Jason Lee, a mini disc, and the murder that launched 1,000 satellites.
It all starts with one thing, foul play.
Damn! I've been waiting to make that joke all day, and I regret nothing.
It's time. Let's rewind this thing, literally, and talk about the moment this movie goes off the rails before it even hits the rails.
We open on peaceful nature, a tranquil lake, ducks, leaves, migration season. It feels like the start of a documentary hosted by Morgan Freeman.
Right? I was like, oh, cool. Is this the wrong movie? Is this Fly Away Home 2? Then, boom, political assassination, right there in the wetlands. Quack, quack, now you're whacked.
Congressman Reynolds gets murked on a dock like 38 seconds into the movie. We haven't even gotten to the title card, and already there's a guy getting murdered in front of ducks.
And you better believe those ducks saw everything.
Nature is complicit. I've said it for years.
Honestly? This whole movie could have been solved if the ducks had just talked.
So Reynolds gets offed because he's trying to do the right thing, stand up to a surveillance bill or whatever. And John Voight is like, nah, get him off the pond.
Cue Gabriel Byrne. Showing up in a turtleneck and trench coat combo so villain-coded it makes you forget he's only in the movie for about 90 seconds.
He walks in like he's the lead of the movie, then gets hit with a goodbye forever by the plot immediately.
This man was hired just to die and sweat on camera. He delivers like three lines, gets threatened, pulls out a camera, and then the NSA just kills him off screen and steals his camera bag.
That's the role I want. Show up, look ominous, say, you can't trust them, and vanish before lunch.
It's amazing. Gabriel Byrne walks into a scene like he's about to unravel the truth of American surveillance. Then he's gone faster than Jason Lee can say, dude, where's my tape?
And that brings us to Jason Lee, are skateboarding, duck filming, accidental whistleblower King.
This was post Mallrats, way before My Name is Earl, and he's just out here with the world's most powerful mini disc camera, filming wildlife like an activist Tony Hawk. And somehow, some way, he ends up holding the only evidence of the NSA murder machine in action.
He's just a guy with a Canon camcorder and a dream. And suddenly he's in The Conversation 2, Birds of Prey.
I love that he's the protagonist for like 15 minutes. It's such a bold move. He's out here sprinting from helicopters and hiding in lingerie stores. And I was like, are we gonna follow him the whole time?
Nope. He's Jason Lee in Act 1, then Jason gone by Act 2.
Honestly, nature photography is dangerous. You think you're just out there filming ducks, and the next thing you know, you've got a kill squad with thermal imaging chasing you through a hotel kitchen.
You think the ducks are migrating? No. They're witness protection.
Ducks, harbingers of national collapse. It's canon now.
So let's recap. We're 5 minutes into the movie. We've got a murdered congressman, Gabriel Byrne, assassinated by plot structure, Jason Lee with GoPro on a mission energy, and ducks who know too much.
And next, the world's most suspicious turkey sandwich handoff and the beginning of Will Smith's identity meltdown.
We're on the run now, folks, and no amount of deli meat can save you.
Unless it's encrypted.
Easy, Jeff. Drink some water.
Are we all good now?
Yes.
All right. So Jason Lee is on the run. The NSA is on him, like SEAL Team 6 meets IT support, and he's got the hottest mini disc in America stuffed in his camera bag like it's a mixtape and not proof of government murder.
And let's just appreciate this moment. This man was filming ducks 20 minutes ago. Now he's sprinting through hotels, evading drones, and trying to pull off the most important handoff in the history of deli bag logistics.
Let's just say it. He hides the evidence in a turkey-themed shopping bag. I'm sorry, what? Who trained him? Oscar Mayer?
It's the most chaotic espionage transfer I've ever seen. Like, it's not a briefcase, it's not a safe house, it's not even a hollowed-out Bible. It's a turkey gift bag from a local department store. And inside, a mini disc filled with full-blown criminal conspiracy.
You're telling me this whole movie could have been avoided if Will Smith had just said, hey, this is a weird thing to hand someone in the lingerie section, and walked away.
Honestly, that's on brand for the late 90s. Everything important was in gift bags.
It's turkey sandwich espionage. Like, happy Thanksgiving, here's a government assassination.
Jason Lee is sweating, sprinting, and actively dying inside, and Will Smith is just trying to buy something nice for his wife. And then, boom. He's got a death bag full of NSA secrets and no one tells him.
The symbolism is beautiful. It's like he tries to do a kind, intimate thing for his marriage and is instantly punished by becoming the most tracked man on Earth.
This is the moment he gets framed by Poultry.
Yes. That's the whole thesis of this movie. Did I just get framed by Poultry? You sure did. That turkey bag just ruined your life.
And while Will is unknowingly holding the disc of doom, Jason Lee goes full escape mode, through alleys, over fences. He's practically parkouring through the mall food court.
And then he gets destroyed by a fire truck. A fire truck.
I screamed. He was so close to making it. He had the intel, the agility, the hoodie, and then wham. Happy holidays from emergency services.
I love how it's not even a hit by the NSA. It's just the chaotic poetry of this movie. You run from the surveillance state, you dodge the satellites, and you get flattened by municipal infrastructure.
It's weirdly realistic. Like 90% of spy movies end in a shootout. This one, accidental emergency vehicle. That's cinema.
And then, cue the NSA surveillance van crew. This group of people looks like they just finished their shift at Circuit City and decided to become federal operatives.
They're tracking Will Smith across every camera in America, eating Cheez-Its, screaming jargon, and making up legal boundaries on the spot.
Jack Black is in the van like he's moving through Quadrant 4. Seth Green is chewing on a pencil like he's reading Will Smith's emotional state from satellite footage. And Barry Pepper is just vibrating with malice and cheekbones.
They've got 8 monitors and no humanity. It's like Radio Shack went to war.
It's like every guy who worked tech support at your high school just got drafted by the CIA.
This is where it kicks off, man. Will Smith becomes public enemy number one for the crime of owning a novelty shopping bag.
He doesn't even know. He goes home, he's just like, I bought you lingerie and accidentally started a manhunt.
A classic mistake.
And from here, it's over. His life is gone. The turkey bag taketh, and the turkey bag destroyeth.
Moral of the story? Never accept poultry-themed packages from panicked skateboarders.
Coming up next, the life-ruining montage, credit cards cut, job lost, marriage imploding, and Will Smith slowly realizing, I think my toaster's working for the government.
Let's go. Okay, so Will Smith has this incriminating mini-disc in his turkey bag. He doesn't know it, but the NSA? Oh, they know.
And from the moment he leaves the store, it's like the entire federal government said, ruin this man's life in under 4 minutes.
This is the most aggressive, no-holds-barred life nuke montage in movie history. Credit cards, canceled, bank account, frozen, phone, tapped, pager, probably exploded. The man is getting taken apart like he owes the Pentagon money.
And it's so fast. He goes from happy husband buying lingerie to wanted terrorist with frozen assets and a destroyed career in what feels like 8 seconds.
The NSA basically speed runs his life.
Like, seriously. I've seen virus outbreaks take longer to spread than this surveillance protocol. They hit every angle. Financial, personal, social. By the end of the montage, I wouldn't have been surprised if his favorite sandwich place stopped accepting his face.
It's so brutal. He tries to use a credit card, declined. He gets home. His marriage is unraveling. He picks up the phone. NSA is already on the line. It's like they're live commentating his downfall.
And let's talk about the Victoria's Secret footage. They have that clip instantly. He just walked in, bought a gift like a loving husband, and bam, now it's in a federal database marked suspicious lace activity.
I've watched this movie so many times, and I still don't know how they had that footage ready before he got home.
It's edited with subtitles. I think they added a soundtrack and color correction. The NSA has an in-house post-production team.
I bet they use Final Cut Pro, the 98 version. You know, the one that came bundled with Spycraft, The Great Game, and Sadness.
Okay. But real talk, this is when the movie turns into a full-blown psychological horror. Like, what if your pants were spying on you? You go out, have a normal day, and then suddenly your shoes are pinging a kill team.
There's a moment where he's just trying to talk to his wife, and you can see the gears turning. Like, am I crazy? Or is someone tracking me through my belt?
And it's shot like a paranoid Mentos commercial. You get the upbeat music, the quick cuts, and then boom, emotional collapse.
This whole sequence is just the NSA speed running a man's descent into madness. There should be a split screen and a timer. Like, category, destroying a civilian, any percent, run, glitchless.
Oh, hey, honey, I'm home. Wait. Why are there helicopters over the house? Classic domestic misunderstanding.
And his boss fires him. Immediately, no questions. He's like, we saw one fax, and now you're a threat to the company.
I mean, yeah, it's a fax. But also, you work in law. Maybe ask one question before throwing him into the conspiracy furnace?
And it's not just the external fallout. Will Smith's whole face starts changing. You watch him go from oh, weird day, to I can't trust anything, not even my shoelaces.
This is when he realizes the only way out is through the tech hermit who lives in an abandoned satellite dish.
And now we're getting to Gene Hackman, wire cages, rage, and a bunker made of broken televisions.
We are officially in paranoia territory. The turkey bag is empty, the credit cards are dead, and the only hope Will Smith has left is a man who duct tapes microwaves together to block incoming signals.
Let's go. It's Brill time.
Okay, but wait, just 1 second. Before we move on, can we please acknowledge that there's an alternate timeline where Hackman just fully leans into this and becomes a freelance bunker guy for hire? Like, forget helping Will Smith. He just becomes a contracted tech paranoia wizard.
Oh no, you mean like a gig economy surveillance sorcerer?
Yes. You Venmo him $2,000 and a blank cassette tape, and he shows up at your house wearing a lead-lined hoodie and jumper cables. He kicks down the door and just screams, "Who's been listening to your ceiling fan, Jim?"
He drives a van that's half UPS truck, half Cold War museum. You don't call him. You stand in your backyard barefoot, shout, "I don't trust Bluetooth," 3 times, and he appears out of the air like static.
I'd watch that show. Tuesdays at 9, Hackman, Unplugged.
Every episode ends the same way. He burns someone's smart TV, stares into the flames, and mutters, "No more cookies for the algorithm."
The theme song? It's just a dial-up modem having a panic attack under a Morse code solo.
And the season finale? He infiltrates a smart fridge data cartel that's been leaking grocery habits to the yogurt-based surveillance network.
And then he turns to the camera and says, "You're safe now, for a while."
10 out of 10. Would binge? Would buy the DVD box set with hidden commentary tracks.
All right. Back to the actual movie. Will Smith is running again. We've got mobsters, spy vans, decoy tapes, and at least one rooftop panic attack on the way. Let's get into it. Okay, we're here. This is where the movie evolves. This is where Enemy of the State stops being just a tech thriller and becomes a one-man stage play about trust issues and microcurrent paranoia.
Ladies and gentlemen, Gene Hackman, the man, the myth, the bunker-dwelling surveillance wizard.
He enters the movie like a ghost from the Watergate dimension. No hello, no explanation, just, "You're compromised, Robert." And suddenly, Will Smith is standing in what looks like a Radio Shack crime scene.
His lair? His lair is a microwave graveyard. It's just walls made of rusted TV guts and coiled copper wire. Like if a Faraday cage had depression.
Every surface is buzzing. Every light flickers like it's hiding a secret. And Hackman is there in the middle of it, wearing a lead-lined bathrobe and talking to oscillating fans like they're on payroll.
He's like if your uncle who never got over the Cold War invented a security system that screams back at you.
I'm not even sure he's living in that bunker. I think he's just integrated with the electrical grid. He absorbs static. That's his breakfast.
And the suit. The suit. He wears this homemade Faraday hoodie that looks like a deep sea diver and a beekeeper had a panic attack in a scrapyard. And then he's just screaming about signal leakage.
This man has seen things. His jumper cables have been through it.
He's not wearing clothes, he's wearing antitrust armor.
And he never sits down. He's just pacing in front of 13 flickering CRTs, like a wizard deciding whether to cast Fireball or start yelling about encryption.
You cannot convince me this is a new character. This is Harry Call. This is The Conversation 2. Call harder.
Yeah, the beard is a little longer, the trench coat is meaner, but the trauma? Same flavor.
This man didn't just walk into the movie. He re-entered from another dimension. He crawled out of a reel of The Conversation and said, "You brought a phone? Are you trying to die?"
He's so mad. He's like a surveillance wizard who has lived alone too long and now thinks fax machines have opinions.
This is Hackman, final form. Crusty tech shaman, lair full of bad ideas, and enough trauma to crash an operating system.
And I love him. I love how deeply unhelpful he is at first. Will Smith is begging for help, and Hackman's like, "You're already dead." And then just throws a blanket over a microwave and disappears into the vents.
His vibe is, "I could save you, but I won't unless you first understand the shape of radio waves."
Also, no notes, but he absolutely lives on black coffee, battery heat, and mistrust.
This part of the movie becomes a side quest in a Fallout game. You've got to meet the hermit, earn his trust, dodge a drone, and craft a signal-proof coat from old VCRs.
And then, just when you think he might soften? Nope. He starts blowing up buildings. He's like, "Time to destroy all evidence of existence." And Will's like, "Wait, that's where I parked."
Hackman just YOLOs a satellite tower like it insulted his circuitry.
That explosion was cathartic. It felt like he was burning the last remnants of hope, or maybe just a closet full of classified Best Buy receipts.
Honestly, this entire stretch is just Hackman therapy. He walks Will through his own trauma like, I lost everything too, man, but I replaced my emotions with static and now I'm fine.
He isn't fine. He's talking to his coffee maker, but he looks fine.
He's functionally broken, but stylistically elite.
So to recap, Hackman enters. He shouts about pants. He builds a Faraday tent. He blows up a building. And somehow, he becomes the soul of the movie.
Will Smith is still the lead, yeah, but Hackman is the truth wizard. He walks into Act Two and goes, this isn't a thriller anymore. This is a paranoia fantasy. What?
He's like the Obi-Wan of surveillance. If Obi-Wan was just really pissed off about fax machines.
Now, more running, more panic, more NSA agents screaming at monitors with potato chip fingers, and a MOB restaurant showdown for the ages.
But first, let's talk about how this wire-coated wizard actually starts to care.
Because that's the arc, baby.
Even the signal jam can still have a little hope.
Okay, now this is it. The team-up phase. Will Smith and Gene Hackman, two men with no chill and too many surveillance nightmares, join forces in what I can only describe as the worst possible buddy cop dynamic.
This is like if Lethal Weapon was made entirely out of distrust and obsolete modems.
It's not a partnership. It's two anxious men in trench coats screaming, "What do you mean that payphone was bugged?" at each other while being triangulated through a vending machine.
We are now in the paranoia gauntlet. Hotel stakeouts, wiretap traps, phone calls that get cut off mid-sentence with a loud beep, and 10 layers of static guilt.
Everything is bugged. Not just phones, not just laptops. I'm pretty sure Will Smith's shoelaces have backup microphones.
And why does every single building in this part of the movie look like it smells like burning laser toner and coffee from 1991?
Yes! There's this sickly green tint to every location like someone spilled Mountain Dew on national security.
The whole second act smells like a Kinko's having a breakdown.
It's all stress. All the time. No daylight. No comfort. Just endless wires, flickering lights, and the sound of your voicemail betraying you.
I mean, seriously, Gene Hackman rigs a hotel room to explode if someone answers the phone. That is not a calm man.
And Will Smith is trying so hard to keep it together. He's like, can we please talk like normal people? And Hackman's like, normal people don't survive surveillance.
It's a buddy movie, but the buddy part is built on mutual anxiety and slow building rage. And
it's like The Odd Couple, but they both think the toaster is working for a shadow government.
I'd watch it. My microwave roommate, NSA edition.
Will Smith is out here trying to reactivate old contacts just to survive, and every one of them is like, oh, hey, Will, you look nervous. Anyway, I gotta go. I'm being tracked through my dental fillings.
There is nowhere safe, no one trustworthy. Even silence is suspicious. You get a quiet moment in this movie, and you're like, wait, is this peace, or is it a trap?
This movie turns ambient stillness into a weapon. Even the elevator dings feel like they're broadcasting your location to someone in a Cheez-It-stained van.
This stretch of the movie is pure trust issues meets bandwidth problems. Like, yes, I want to believe in you. But also, are you routing my emotions through a satellite array?
Every conversation in this phase of the movie could be titled, "Do you love me or are you wired for sound?"
They're not paranoid. They're just accurately overwhelmed.
And you can tell Brill, Hackman, is starting to care, but he doesn't know how. So instead of giving Will Smith encouragement, he just slaps a satellite dish on his back and screams, "Run west!"
Yes! Their communication style is screaming, running, more screaming. One moment of almost hugging, followed by more screaming.
They are the least compatible spy duo ever, but somehow, it works.
They're the surveillance state's worst nightmare. A smooth-talking lawyer and a bitter hermit with a vendetta and a vest made out of old VCR parts.
Honestly, friendship looks different for everyone.
So to recap, Nothing is safe. Trust is a weapon. Phones are lies. And Gene Hackman is yelling inside an elevator shaft while Will Smith runs across a rooftop holding a scrambled satellite signal in his jacket.
And we still haven't even gotten to the mob restaurant gunfight or the fake tape switcheroo.
Before we get to the mob restaurant shootout and the tape swap madness, can we just pause for a second and ask the big question? Who is running the NSA in this movie?
Yes, thank you. Because this entire agency appears to be staffed exclusively by guys who failed their IT certification exam but still brought snacks.
They all look like they just finished freshman orientation. Half of them are eating Cheez-Its, one's vaping, and Jack Black is literally wearing a hoodie with the sleeves cut off.
These are not agents. These are dudes who got lost on the way to Land Night at a GameStop, and now they're running America's most powerful surveillance network.
To be fair, that's kind of how tech works. Just a bunch of anxious people in lanyards and hoodies controlling the future.
You've got Jack Black in cargo pants, Seth Green in a graphic tee, and Barry Pepper looking like the senior class president of Paranoia High.
Nobody over the age of 29, nobody with a tie, just a room full of guys yelling, "Triangulate that signal," with Dorito dust on their fingers.
And they're so powerful. They're controlling satellites, cell towers, radio feeds, credit reports, social security data, surveillance drones, and they all look like they're 1 week away from starting a skate punk band.
It's like someone accidentally outsourced the NSA to a college AV club with clearance levels.
I kept expecting one of them to say, "Hey, while we're tracking Will Smith, can I upload my mixtape?"
They're all typing furiously on those late 90s clacky beige keyboards like, "We've got a visual on the subject. He's buying socks. Possible code red."
They're the most overpowered IT interns in cinema history, and I love them.
They make John Voight look like a substitute principal trying to control a group project gone rogue.
And let's not forget, none of these people are ever held accountable. They get dozens of civilians involved, blow up half a city, literally murder a congressman. And by the end, they're just back in the van like, "Oops, let's go get smoothies."
I would pay good money for a post-credit scene where John Voight is like, "Well, that went south." And Seth Green's just in the background setting fire to the footage like, "We were never here, sir."
They're not agents. They're vibes.
And yet, somehow, these Red Bull-fueled tech gremlins are the most dangerous people in the movie.
We have entered the age of NSA, Gen Z edition.
And it's terrifying, and I love it. Let's go to the mob restaurant showdown. It's time for tapes, turkeys, and total chaos. Okay, we are now entering full-blown showdown mode. It's the final act. Everything's on the line. And it all goes down in the most logical place for a high-stakes, government-collapsing, tape-swapping espionage explosion. A mob restaurant.
Because obviously, where else would the NSA and the Mafia decide to settle their differences? Olive Garden was booked?
It's a perfect neutral zone. You've got red sauce, linen tablecloths, and a waiter who's definitely seen things.
The vibe is Tony Soprano meets season 3 of 24. Everyone is carrying a gun and a pager. There's probably veal parm in the back and satellite schematics on the table.
Honestly, peak cinema.
So here's the setup. Brill and Will walk in like they're just here for lunch. But secretly, they've got decoy tapes. It's the old switcheroo at Sal's maneuver.
There is nothing more satisfying than watching John Voight think he's won, lean back in that leather booth like he just ordered dessert, and then realize he's been played.
It's gorgeous. It's Ocean's 11 with meatballs and gunfire. The tape switch scene deserves an Oscar. I don't care that it doesn't fully make sense. It's got pacing, sass, and threat level 5 dialogue energy.
Will Smith just walks in with all the confidence in the world. After getting his life systematically obliterated for the past hour, and finally says, "Y'all done messed up."
And then, the shooting starts. Gunfire, yelling, ducking behind pasta bowls. It's like Michael Mann directed an episode of The Bear.
Mob guys and NSA guys are all in the same room, and none of them can aim, and everybody's yelling like it's someone's cousin's baptism in the next room.
You just know there was a roast beef lunch special happening mid-shootout. Some poor guy at the next table is like, Can I still get the cannoli, or are we under siege?
And through all of this, Gene Hackman is already planning his exit. He's pulling wires out of the wall, disappearing into the shadows like a surveillance Batman. Smoke bomb made of burnt VHS tape and broken trust.
He doesn't run. He fades. Like a radio signal from 1983.
This man throws Will Smith one look like, I taught you everything I could before the salad came. And then he disappears into the restaurant's breaker panel.
He'll pop up again. Somewhere in Detroit. Fixing a ham radio, giving advice to a confused delivery guy.
So Voight's crew gets absolutely dismantled. They're not just outgunned. They're outsmarted, outmaneuvered, and outtaped.
And all in a place that probably had a Yelp review that morning that said, great meatballs, aggressive Wi-Fi.
By the time it's over, Will Smith has his life back. Voight's team is in surveillance jail. The mob has probably upped their security. And Brill? Gone like static on a cloudy day.
Roll credits. Play that late 90s espionage rock song with a little bit of saxophone. Let's go.
Hang on. But seriously, what happens to everyone in that surveillance van after this movie ends? Because I refuse to believe they just clocked out and went home.
There is no way any of them were even legally employed. They were all 24 years old. No badges, just hoodies, headsets, and reckless keyboard confidence.
I guarantee at least one of them vanished into the wind like Brill. Probably Seth Green. He's in a cabin somewhere surrounded by screensaver fish tanks and bad decisions.
Jack Black? He's definitely trying to rebrand as a freelance cybersecurity consultant. You know he put former government tech specialist on his LinkedIn and forgot to mention that he got people killed over a mini disc.
He's working IT now at a mid-tier credit union. Still wears the headset. Still tracks everyone's lunch breaks. Doesn't trust the copier.
And Barry Pepper? He just walked into another thriller. One universe closes, another opens. Now he's in Enemy of the State 2, Electric Bugaloo, and nobody questions it.
I have this theory. They all got redirected to a Red Lobster job fair. Government was like, okay, this never happened. Here's an apron and a biscuit mix packet. Good luck.
The second the mission failed, John Voight's character just pulled the plug on all their contracts. You don't exist anymore. Delete your names. Go sell routers in Denver.
That van crew had no plan, no rank, no oversight, and all the power.
They were literally just five bored tech guys and one scary manager with a surveillance kink.
Honestly, they'll be fine. Guys like that always resurface in some other agency with new names, lamer facial hair, and Bluetooth headsets. They're like espionage roaches.
And I bet there's one guy from the van who still doesn't know what happened. He went to the bathroom during the mob restaurant gunfight and came back like, guys? Guys?
And now he runs a tech startup that sells smart salt shakers and Bluetooth belt buckles.
And he's probably still tracking Will Smith, just out of habit.
Beautiful. We salute you, Van Goblins of the surveillance state. We'll never forget your Cheez-It-fueled tyranny. So the dust has settled. The mob guys are toast. The mini disc is safe. The lingerie has been tactically declassified. And now Brill vanishes into legend.
He doesn't say goodbye. He doesn't stick around. He just leaves Will a note. A handwritten, good job, kid. Don't trust landlines. And dips into the digital void.
He disappears like a haunted dial tone. One second he's there, screaming about microwaves. Next second, just a hum in the atmosphere and a warm signal glitch.
He walks off into the sunrise like a wizard who's uninstalled himself from reality. Probably retires to a bunker made entirely out of coaxial cable and microwave parts.
I imagine him just sitting alone on a rolling chair in the middle of a dark, echoing warehouse, surrounded by CRT monitors and backup drives full of secrets from 1982.
Probably still listening to radio static and writing angry letters to fax machines.
And you just know his exit was clean. He left no digital trace, no identity, no lunch receipts. He is now officially a rumor.
He is the ghost in the machine, the boogeyman of broadband, the patron saint of paranoia.
And I'm going to say, we deserve a trilogy.
Yes. The Conversation. Enemy of the State, and the final chapter. Brill, Signal, Terminated.
Give me Gene Hackman versus modern surveillance tech. Hackman breaking into an Alexa data center. Hackman screaming, "Trust no fridge." Hackman building a Faraday cage out of air fryers and heartbreak.
The subtitle is just, "He unplugged for our sins."
But it never happens. I'm okay with this ending. Because the way he leaves, it's perfect. He doesn't get redemption. He doesn't get applause. He just retreats into silence, like the mythic loner hero he always was.
He didn't want peace. He wanted clarity and no signal interference.
He's done enough. He's yelled at enough monitors. He's scrambled enough frequencies. Let Hackman rest. He's tired.
He saved the world without ever leaving the shadows.
The surveillance state lives on. But now, it does so with a little more respect. Because somewhere out there, Brill is listening.
And he's judging your router placement.
And your password strength.
And your microwave. Always your microwave.
We did it, y'all. We survived Enemy of the State. We followed the mini disc. We tracked the trench coats. And we watched Gene Hackman vaporize into legend.
What a ride.
What a legacy.
What a movie.
All right, real quick, before we wrap this whole thing up. Can we just agree this movie deserved a post-credits scene? Like full Marvel-style sequel tease.
Yes! It should have just cut to a dusty payphone in the middle of nowhere, like Arizona, night, nobody around.
And the phone just starts ringing. Not a person in sight, just whined and like a tumbleweed made of old coaxial cables.
And then someone finally picks up, but you don't see who. You just hear it. Click. And then...
I told you not to trust Google.
Yes. And then, boom, click, dial tone, and it cuts back to some 23-year-old NSA intern in a hoodie, eating string cheese like, sir?
And his boss slowly sits down like it's a ghost story, just says, "That was Brill."
And then, boom, black screen. Text fades in. Brill will return when the signal is weak.
That's it. That's the whole franchise set up. Give me the conversation three. Brill out loud. It's 2025. He's yelling at smart fridges. He's building bomb-proof, Alexa-proof bunkers. He's like Batman crossed with your uncle who never upgraded past AOL.
The man lives in a Faraday cage made of toaster ovens and secrets.
He only communicates through ham radio and haunting your RAM.
And every morning he drinks black coffee and a backup battery.
Let Hackman rest, but also bring him back just once more. Impossible. I know.
He would deserve it.
And so do we.
Brill forever.
All right. We still got to wrap up Brill's microwave mic drop exit and maybe talk about whether or not the NSA just went back to work on Monday like nothing ever happened.
Oh, they definitely did. One guy probably logged his overtime hours under turkey debrief.
That sounds like a cold cut war crime.
But first, it's time for a quick message from one of our very real, very not fake sponsors. And, Lewis is handling this one again. I haven't previewed it, and I'm already afraid.
Oh, no.
Here we go.
I brought props this time.
You brought... Wait, are those wires? Are you holding a bundle of wires like it's a bouquet?
They're cords, and they're redacted.
Oh, my God. He's already started.
Do not plug that into anything.
Let's just let him cook.
Or at least let him short-circuit quietly.
This episode of Rewind or Die is brought to you by Redacted Cords, the only extension cord company that guarantees zero data leakage from your surge protector. Need to power your surveillance equipment? Need to scramble an audio feed while also charging your George Foreman grill? Redacted Cords has you covered. Every cord is triple braided with tactical copper sheathing, infused with non-GMO graphite mesh, and sealed inside a decommissioned VHS shell.
What the hell is tactical copper?
You'll know it when it survives a lightning strike. You think Brill uses regular cords? You think he's out here just raw-dogging his power supply? No, he uses redacted. And now, when you order using promo code BRILLMUP15, you get a free decoy plug head that emits safe background static so your enemies think you're at home watching Jeopardy. But really, you're in the wind.
That's actually kind of brilliant.
I swear, if I get one of these and it electrocutes me while playing saxophone jazz, I'm blaming you.
Redacted cords. Because when your electricity's being watched, you gotta fight back.
I'm gonna be honest. I feel like I just lived through a government takeover. My brain is sweating. My spine is coiled like a surveillance wire. I need a nap.
I feel like I've been tracked through my soul. We just spent an hour breaking down one of the most anxiety-inducing, signal-jamming, neck-craning movies ever made. And somehow I still don't trust my phone. And I'm talking into a mic.
My eyes hurt, not from the screen, from remembering every single room in this movie had a flickering light bulb. I feel like I've personally sweated through 5 trench coats.
This movie has vibes so intense they should come with emotional encryption, like, do I feel energized? Do I feel watched? Do I feel like someone installed a bug in my hoodie string? Yes to all of it.
I forgot how relentless this movie is. There's no break. There's no comfort. It's just run, fax, hide, lie, sprint, track, sweat, delete. That's the movie.
I feel like I got fired from a job I didn't even know I had, and my toaster's mad at me about it.
I feel great. This movie's like paranoia therapy. You go in scared, come out suspiciously empowered.
Louis is thriving. Jeff is short-circuiting. Steve looks like a printer just insulted him. And me? I feel like I need Hackman to whisper safe words through a payphone.
Same. Also, do we just all agree to live off the grid now? I'm going to start paying for groceries with barter and vibes.
I already do.
All right. That's it. We made it. We survived Enemy of the State. And somehow, we're still podcasting. All right, let's take a breath. We've been chased by satellites, betrayed by electronics, yelled at by Gene Hackman, and I have paranoia-induced shin splints. But let's ask the big question. Would you survive this movie?
Oh, like actually survive this plot?
Yes. If you were Will Smith, just some guy in a trench coat trying to buy something sexy for your wife, and instead you got publicly crucified by fax machine data, would you make it?
Oh, I'm dead in the first 5 minutes. I would have accepted that turkey bag, smiled, walked home, and then just, boom, NSA through the window. I'm being dragged across my own lawn by a man named Saunders with a headset.
Okay, but do I get to be me, or do I have Will Smith charisma levels?
No, you get you. That's the horror.
Okay, then yeah. I'd probably try to log into my bank app and get instantly flagged as hostile. Then I'd call tech support and accidentally reroute a satellite. That's it. That's my arc.
I survive. Easily, I vanish into a Best Buy and live among the routers.
Of course you do.
Lewis is the Jason Bourne of mall kiosks.
I feel like I'd try to survive. Like, I'd put on the hoodie. I'd cut my phone line with scissors like a cool guy. But in the end, I'd panic order Taco Bell on DoorDash and give away my coordinates.
You'd definitely get compromised by a location tag on a burrito.
And me, I'd hide in a Motel 6, use the Wi-Fi, and get traced by a Bluetooth-enabled electric toothbrush in the next room.
That's how they'd find you. Subject is pinging from a suspicious toothbrush on Channel 6G.
Meanwhile, I've changed my name and opened a modem repair shop in Vermont. People come in. They leave with cans of soup and scrambled phone numbers. That's my America.
Honestly, Lewis is the Brill we deserve.
So no, none of us survive, except Lewis, who apparently knows how to hotwire a payphone using a soup can and courage.
If there was a sequel, I want Lewis to be the guy Gene Hackman calls when he needs backup.
I'd answer, unless the call was coming from Google.
Oh no!
All right, shifting gears for a sec here. Jeff, you got anything on the making of this movie? Like any production stuff we should know? We just spent 30 minutes arguing about dying in a microwave hoodie. Give us a real fact.
Yes. Actually, yes. There's some wild stuff about how this movie came together. First off, Tony Scott directed this in absolute chaos mode. The camera style, the surveillance aesthetic, the jump cuts. This was all part of his visual evolution between Crimson Tide and Man on Fire.
So what you're saying is, Tony Scott looked at the conversation and went, Cool. What if this movie was on Red Bull and filmed by a caffeine ghost?
Exactly. Also, this was produced by Jerry Bruckheimer. So you've got surveillance anxiety plus explosions plus sound design that makes your spine rattle. It's like The Conversation meets Con Air.
That explains the gunfight in a deli. Bruckheimer was like, what if paranoia was loud?
And this part's underrated. The script was originally floating around in the early 90s as a more subdued thriller. But once Will Smith signed on, they restructured the whole movie around his charisma and momentum.
That tracks. You can feel when he shows up. Like the movie just looked at the camera and said, and now, star power.
You know what that means, right? There's probably a version of this movie where Jason Lee was the lead, and we never even got to the turkey bag.
Also, fun fact, Gene Hackman agreed to do this movie because he liked the connection to The Conversation. He never confirmed it publicly, but he knew what he was doing. He leaned into it. This was a stealth sequel in his mind.
So you're saying Hackman signed on for the lore?
Yes.
Canon or not, he's Harry Call to me.
Jeff, thank you for validating all my red string brill theories. I feel seen. All right. So, before we dive into the cold, hard box office data, can we just talk about how stressed out this movie made me? Like, I finished watching it and instinctively turned off my Wi-Fi.
I took my phone case off, just in case it was hiding a microphone or a vibrating lie detector.
I unplugged a toaster I haven't used in 4 years. It was just sitting there, watching me.
I deleted 4 apps and apologized to my microwave. Felt like the right move.
This movie gave me trust issues with my shoes. I don't know why, but I was like, how long has Nike known my location?
I caught myself whispering while typing an email, like the NSA was going to lip-read my keystrokes.
I tried to Venmo my friend for tacos and accidentally triggered an anti-money laundering protocol. Now, I'm pretty sure John Voight is watching my bank account.
Joke's on them. My bank account has $38 and a Blockbuster late fee.
Honestly, this movie should come with a wearable stress monitor and a Gene Hackman emergency hotline.
If your heart rate exceeds 120 beats per minute while watching this movie, please call BRILL at extension 404.
Brill doesn't answer calls. You send a signal through an unplugged lamp, and if he thinks you're worth saving, a fax appears in your mailbox.
And it's just a message that says, too late, burn your pants.
Okay. We've clearly lost it. Let's bring it back around before one of us wraps our modem in tinfoil. Let's talk box office. Because this movie, it made some noise. All right, it's time for the box office breakdown. And I just want to say something right now. In 1998, Will Smith was untouchable. The man owned July every summer, like a seasonal rental.
This came out November 20th, 1998, so technically Thanksgiving release energy, but still. Will Smith was riding that post-Men in Black momentum like a surveillance-proof surfboard.
And the crazy thing is, this movie was number two opening weekend, right behind the Rugrats movie.
Excuse me?
Yep. Will Smith was almost taken out by animated toddlers, but don't worry, he still made bank.
Okay, no, I can't live in a world where Chucky Finster outgrosses Gene Hackman in a wired bunker.
To be fair, Rugrats was a cultural event. It had orange VHS tapes. It had kids screaming in multiplexes like war was happening.
I saw them both that weekend. Double feature. One taught me about friendship. The other taught me how to hide from the government.
So Enemy of the State made $20 million opening weekend, ended up with $111 million domestic, $231 million worldwide. Solid hit.
In a movie that starts with a duck murder and ends with a mob shootout. Incredible.
Also, this was the year of Armageddon, Saving Private Ryan. Rush Hour, and this movie still carved out a lane.
You know what else came out in 1998? Godzilla. Blade, The Truman Show, Out of Sight, Lethal Weapon 4, Mulan. It was a crowded year, and Enemy of the State still held its own.
This movie outperformed some massive stuff. People wanted paranoia and satellites and trench coats, and most importantly, people wanted Hackman.
He showed up, screamed about signal leakage, and cashed a $5 million paycheck. That's power.
He deserved a performance bonus for yelling, "Don't touch that phone," with the intensity of a dying wizard.
Let's also not forget, this was Tony Scott's second box office hit in 4 years after Crimson Tide. He was in full slick paranoia mode. You could feel the sunglasses through the screen.
And this was Jason Lee's highest grossing movie for years. Man shows up, runs around with a turkey bag for 10 minutes, gets flattened by a fire truck, and still walks out with a box office win.
I want that on a plaque. Flattened by a fire truck. Still made $200 million.
So yeah, Enemy of the State hit. It was serious money for a serious movie that had zero right being this fun.
And this was Will Smith's third consecutive blockbuster after Independence Day and Men in Black. The man could have starred in a movie called Fax Machine: The Reckoning, and it still would have made $150 million.
I would have seen that. Twice.
All right, we've yelled about box office. We've honored the mini disc. We've run from satellites. You know what that means.
It's time for final thoughts.
And probably a nervous breakdown.
Or enlightenment. Whichever comes first.
Okay, so Enemy of the State crushed it at the box office. Will Smith couldn't miss. And Gene Hackman cashed a check just for yelling at microwaves. But now I'm thinking,
oh no.
What if Brill showed up in other movies? Like, what if he just wanders out of a satellite van and starts screaming about signal leakage in movies that have nothing to do with surveillance?
Oh, God. Like, you've got mail, but Hackman's in the bookstore basement muttering, "They're monitoring the modem, Meg."
I want him in Space Jam, just yelling at the scoreboard. "It's not real. None of it's real. Bugs Bunny's a decoy."
Let's do this. Brill Cinematic Universe, go.
All right, we're doing this. What other movies deserve a Brill crossover? Hackman just wandering in from the microwave void and yelling at characters who are not equipped for what he's bringing.
Easy, Mrs. Doubtfire. He kicks down the door like someone's bugging the vacuum. Sally Field's like, "Sir, that's my nanny."
The Notebook. Right in the middle of the rain kiss. "They're tracking your love through the bridge tiles, Noah."
Finding Nemo. Brill just swimming through a coral server farm screaming at Marlin about encrypted sonar buoys.
Sleepless in Seattle. Meg Ryan's on the plane. Brill sits next to her, pulls out a ham radio, and whispers, "There's a listening station in O'Hare. Don't drink the coffee."
I want him in Good Will Hunting, but he's just in the hallway, rewiring chalkboards and muttering, "It's not your fault. It's the surveillance mainframe."
Jurassic Park. Brill's in the control room, unplugging security systems, and screaming, "The raptors are listening through the cameras. Turn off the visual feed."
Okay, but wait. Titanic. Rose is floating on the door, and Hackman just surfaces from the water wearing a Faraday wetsuit and whispers, "The iceberg was a distraction."
He replaces Victor Garber. Redesigns the ship using signal-absorbing rivets.
Can we put him in the Fast and the Furious? He just lives in Dom's garage attic. "The NOS is bugged, Dom. They're tracking your quarter miles."
Yes, yes. He's the ghost of analog past who shows up anytime technology gets too loud. Brill, multiversal interference.
Put him in Legally Blonde, right before Elle's courtroom victory. Brill crashes through the ceiling tiles and yells, "The jury's compromised. They've been receiving signals through their shoes."
Then he just crawls into the air conditioning and leaves.
Always leaves.
That's the rule. He arrives in chaos, says seven cryptic things, disables a smart appliance, and fades into static.
Final answer. Every movie deserves a Brill cameo. Even Paddington. Especially Paddington.
Brill taught Paddington how to jam a surveillance drone using marmalade.
Okay, we need to wrap this up before we reboot the entire studio system. Final thoughts. Emotional damage. Maybe some closure? Let's bring it home. All right. We've screamed about satellites, trench coats, encrypted roast beef, and I think it's finally time to wrap this up.
Yeah. Final thoughts. Emotional processing. Maybe a little trust building. Let's bring it home.
Wait. Where's the game?
Uh-oh.
The what now?
The game. There's always a game. I brought snacks. I cleared my head. I pre-gamed for the game.
We didn't actually plan one this time. We were going to skip it and...
You're telling me. I sat through microwave-based espionage, turkey bag betrayals, and Gene Hackman emotionally detonating a Radio Shack. And you didn't even bring a game?
He's genuinely spiraling. This is real-time betrayal.
Lewis, I hate to break it to you, but we didn't do a game this week.
No, come on.
Because we did two.
Oh, come on.
Absolute villain behavior.
You monster. You signal-jamming, game-hoarding, Hackman-channeling monster.
Welcome to the game, tonight's edition. NSA intern or 90s movie hacker?
God help us.
I've never felt more alive.
Let's go.
Welcome, agents and pizza-eating wiretappers, to the one game where Cheez-It dust and keyboard intensity collide. It's time for NSA intern or 90s movie hacker.
Kill me.
Here's how it works. I'll describe a person, either a real character from the NSA surveillance van in Enemy of the State, or a fictional 90s hacker from a movie with way too much green lighting and floppy disks. You yell, intern or hacker, winner gets a mini disk of respect. Loser gets hacked by their blender.
I was born for this.
I studied nothing. Let's go.
Round one. Wears a hoodie, eats snacks aggressively, types like his fingers owe him money. Once said, we've got a triangulated feed. He's in Macy's.
Intern, it's an intern.
Intern for sure.
Intern, Jack Black. Tactical hoodie. Confirmed?
Correct. That was NSA intern, also known as Jack Black in surveillance gremlin form. Round two. Wears a leather trench coat. Hangs out in cyber cafes. Once hacked the Gibson mainframe using rollerblades and vibes.
Hacker. That's hackers. That's literally hackers.
Oh, yeah. That's hacker energy.
Serial killer, played by Matthew Lillard. Hacktivist royalty.
Yep, that's a 90s movie hacker. And we will not be slandering hackers on this podcast.
Never.
Round three, wears khakis, has a soul patch. Once screamed, he's routing through Kansas, while eating from a family-sized bag of Chex Mix.
Intern gotta be.
Nope, that's too accurate. Intern.
He feels like an intern, but I'm going double bluff. Hacker.
Oh, intern. But with hacker posture. That was Barry Pepper's NSA Heat Seeker Squad.
I hate this game.
I am this game.
Round four. Where's Fishnet? Hacked a casino from a payphone. Believes sunglasses are a mindset. Was once played by Donald Logue.
Hacker. That's got to be Swordfish or something.
Hacker. That man's never paid taxes.
That's JT from the net. Legend.
Bingo. That's a hacker. He knows how to open a firewall with sarcasm and leftover pizza. Lightning round. Bonus names. Rapid fire. Say intern or hacker. Bugs. Brill. Con. Iceman 69. Shadow Reaper.
Paul.
Bugs. Hacker. Brill. Truth Wizard. Con. Intern. Iceman 69. Hack the planet. Shadow Reaper. Definitely hacker. Paul. That's a barista.
You know what? I give up.
All hackers, except Paul. Paul's the intern who leaves the satellite on overnight and crashes Luxembourg.
Correct. All of you win, except Paul. Paul was compromised. Final score. Lewis, undefeated legend. Steve, hacker energy, untrained, dangerous. Jeff, furious but accurate. Adam, emotionally compromised by my own trivia. That's it. That's the game. You all survived NSA intern or 90s movie hacker, and now it's time to close this file.
Hey, Steve? Weird question. Do you know if this movie had, like, any tie-ins? Like fast food marketing? I'm just curious if Enemy of the State had a Burger King decoder watch or a collectible Brill cup.
What a transition. We just finished a game about surveillance gremlins, and now we're talking Hackman-themed combo meals?
I want this so badly. The Brill Meal. Comes in a lead-lined box, includes a turkey sandwich and a side of encrypted fries. Comes with a free VHS of your own home being watched.
I can't believe I'm saying this, but this movie is too adult for a fast food tie-in and not adult enough for a cigarette brand.
Still feels like there should have been a mini-disc toy in a KFC kids pack, or a Will Smith action figure with paranoia grip.
You pull the string and he screams, "Burn your clothes!"
I would have bought every Hackman figure, especially the one that comes with a wire cage playset and a stack of fake microwaves.
The only tie-in this movie needed was a coupon for a landline disconnection, or maybe a free pager that only screams when you're being watched.
All right, just checking. It felt like a Carl's Jr. thriller in my soul.
Okay, deep breath. We did it. We watched Enemy of the State. We survived the NSA, the mini disc, the trench coats, and Brill's wire sanctuary of anxiety. Here's my takeaway. This movie rules. It's slick, loud, anxious, and so ahead of its time, it's basically a prophecy with a Jerry Bruckheimer logo. I'll never trust turkey bags or department stores ever again.
This is paranoia cinema at its best. Tony Scott took a tech thriller premise and filmed it like a caffeine-induced breakdown. Every camera move screams, "You're being tracked," and also, "It's gorgeous." And the fact that this is a spiritual sequel to The Conversation just makes it nerd canon. Hackman delivers a masterclass in meltdown energy and still somehow walks away as the heart of the movie.
I love that it never slows down. The whole movie feels like someone yelling in your ear while you sprint through a Best Buy. It's chaotic in all the right ways. Will Smith holds it all together while everyone around him is either trying to kill him or sell him lingerie. And Jack Black controls a billion-dollar satellite array like it's a Sega Dreamcast. I'm in.
This movie is so much fun. It's a thriller that has no chill, no breaks, and no safe locations. It's brilliantly paranoid, beautifully shot, and somehow makes fax machines terrifying. Also, Brill is my hero. I want to age into a man who lives in a Faraday cage and gives cryptic advice about surveillance coffee makers.
I can't believe this movie still holds up in 2025. It should have aged like an AOL trial CD, but it didn't. It's more relevant than ever. And honestly, Brill may have saved us all.
We've said it all. We've yelled about it. We've been watched. We've been heard.
We've been compromised.
And it was beautiful.
All right, time to shut it down. Tear out the wires, wipe the tapes, and seal the turkey bag. All right, that's going to do it for Enemy of the State. We've been tracked, hacked, faxed, bugged, betrayed, and microwave scrambled beyond recognition.
I'm going to go live in the woods now. No shoes, no tech, just a post-it note that says, "Trust no duck."
I've already burned my router, emotionally, with Sage.
I'm heading to Radio Shack to pay my respects, if there still was one.
But before we go, it's time to shift gears one more time. Because next week, oh baby, we're leaving behind covert bunkers and satellite uplinks and heading straight into unauthorized football chaos. That's right, we're watching The Replacements.
Oh no.
Yes?
2000, Keanu Reeves, not Johnny Utah, not Shane Falco from Point Break. No, this is Shane Falco, quarterback for the Washington Sentinels, a washed-up legend dragged out of boat repair obscurity to save a team of strike season freaks and clumsy legends.
Winners want the ball. I live by that.
And let's not forget, Hackman's still here. He plays the coach. One last gruff monologue before we officially let him ride into the paranoia sunset.
From microwave bunkers to sideline clipboards, the Hackman arc is unreal.
So grab your cleats, your beers, and your emotional baggage, because next week, we're suiting up for The Replacements.
God help us.
I'm ready.
See you on the field. Okay, that's it. We've officially made it out of the microwave lair. Gene Hackman has vanished. Will Smith got his life back, and the ducks still at large.
My body feels like it's been live streamed by a fax machine. My trust in society, gone, deleted, 404, not found.
I just cut a phone cord and I use a cell phone. That's where I'm at emotionally.
I opened a cabinet earlier and flinched. I think my toaster blinked.
So, yeah, if you've been listening this whole time, you're probably already on a list, so you might as well hit follow. Embrace the chaos. Because next week, we're trading wiretaps for helmet taps. We're talking The Replacements. Keanu, Hackman, emotional touchdowns, and zero protection. But until then, don't trust the government. All right, if you somehow survived all of that, make sure you like, subscribe, scream into the algorithm, whatever works. New episodes drop every Monday, and we've got Rewind or Die shorts coming every Thursday, so you're getting double doses of this chaos every week. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and yes, even X. We are everywhere. Your aunt shares minion memes and your ex posts cryptic quotes about loyalty. Thanks for listening. We'll see you Thursday. Do not miss it.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.
Producer Steve hopes you have enjoyed this program.